allowed himself to be led by the flesh, repented and allowed himself, was restored by the Lord, allowed himself to be led by the Spirit. And because of him, thousands came to Christ. Probably millions if you go from then to today. We see a difference between true repentance and remorse as we get into chapter 27. 27 verse 1 says, "When the morning came," after these things we just talked about in 26, "when the morning came, all the chief priests and elders of the people plotted against Jesus to put him to death. And when they had bound him, they led him away and delivered him to Pontius Pilate, the governor." When the morning came, we talked a little bit about that. We didn't hit all of them, but there's several reasons why that nighttime trial, the gathering of the Sanhedrin, the Supreme Court in the land, why that would have been an illegal trial. So they gathered again as a formality in the morning to give a proper appearance to things. They gathered together the chief priests and elders of the people, notice of the people, not the Lord, and plotted against Jesus to put him to death. And when they had bound him, they bound Jesus. Certainly he wasn't dangerous. They bound him and delivered him to Pontius Pilate, the governor. Now, if you read church history at all, Pontius Pilate has an interesting past. History tells us he was probably born a slave, bought his Roman citizenship somewhere along the line, but always had this contested relationship with the Jews. When he first came in this area to rule, he set up his praetorium or court area and put up different gold shields, different symbols of Rome. And the Jewish people rebelled against that, thought that that was false idols, did not want that there, that was blasphemous to have that around the temple. Pontius Pilate had gone back to Caesarea by the sea, his main headquarters. And at that time, the population in Jerusalem was estimated to be at about 7 million people. 7,000 of those people came to the home of Pontius Pilate and protested that he had placed these things around the temple, wanted them removed. And that went on for a period of time. They surrounded his encampment. He didn't do much about it. But anytime somebody came to visit or left, they had to deal with this group of people that had assembled. So finally, with some influence and suggestion from Rome, he decided to stand up to them and said, "Hey, you guys need to leave this alone or you'll be put to death." Their response was to kneel down and present their necks to be killed. It was that important to them. One of the first major conflicts with Pontius Pilate and the people. When they did that, he didn't kill them. He basically caved to the will of the people. Probably set a precedence for politics today. But he went and removed those. The people went back. And there was a series of events, two or three other items, that Pontius Pilate would get called back to Rome and chastised for the way that he dealt with the Jewish people. That there was tension and rebellion among them. We start off with that, and then Matthew takes a break here, and we go back and we talk about Judas in verse 3. It says, "Then Judas, his betrayer, seeing that he had been condemned, was remorseful and brought back the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and elders, saying, 'I have sinned by betraying innocent blood.' And they said, 'What is it to us? You see to it.' Then he threw down the pieces of silver in the temple and departed and went and hanged himself. But the chief priest took the silver pieces and said, 'It is not lawful to put them into the treasury because they are the price of blood.' And they consulted together and brought with them the potter's field and bought with them the potter's field to bury strangers in. Therefore, that field has been called the field of blood to this day. Then was fulfilled what was spoken by Jeremiah the prophet, saying, 'And they took the 30 pieces of silver, the value of him who was priced, whom they of the children of Israel priced, and and gave them for the potter's field as the Lord directed me. Interesting, he takes this break and presents us with Judas again. Right at the end, not forgetting that we just talked about Peter. Peter failed. Peter denied his Lord. Didn't choose another one, though. Didn't change religions. Didn't start following false beliefs. He just failed. Wept bitterly. Repented. The Lord restored him. Judas, his betrayer, seeing that he had been condemned, seeing that Jesus had been condemned, actually convicted. There's different theories about what the motivation of Judas was, why he did this. Maybe he was unhappy that the Lord's kingdom on earth hadn't been established and he was going to force the issue. I don't like to speculate because it's not there. So I can't really add to what the Word says and shouldn't. Seeing that he had been condemned was remorseful and brought back the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and elders. This word remorseful is different, very different than the word repentant. Had Judas seen the Lord as they were bringing him out, been convicted of what he did, could he have repented? Could he have turned to the Lord at that point and truly repented? I believe we all can. I believe that's why Jesus came to this earth. He didn't. He was remorseful. Friday night, I was at Penobscot County Jail. Saw several people that were this kind of remorseful, this kind of repentant. Very sorry that they were there, basically. Sorry for what they had done, remorseful that they had got caught, but not truly repentant. Wasn't a change of heart, wasn't a change of direction. Judas knew what he had done in verse 4, saying, "I have sinned by betraying innocent blood." Don't you think if Judas had anything on Jesus at that point, anything real, he would have used that to justify his sin? You know, well, you guys see this. Jesus is just a Sunday morning Christian. This is what he presents to you, but here's what I know. Betrayed innocent blood. And they said, "What is that to us? You see to it. You deal with it. You did this thing." Then he threw down the pieces of silver in the temple and departed and went and hanged himself. Threw the silver back at him. They were guilty too. Went and hanged himself. There's a lot of speculation on that. In Acts it talks about that Judas fell and his bowels spilled out. And how do we put those two together? Some say that he hung by the neck and rotted and fell and burst open, fell down an embankment. Others say that there was an earthquake. Historians tell us that to be hung by the neck at that time would have been very rare, would have been unusual, that Judas may have actually impaled himself, hung that way. What we do know is that he killed himself, committed suicide. Because of that, we don't truly know. We don't truly know what happened with Judas in those final moments. The word doesn't tell us that he was repentant. It tells us that he was remorseful. Verse 6, "But the chief priests took the silver pieces and said, 'It's not lawful to put them into the treasury because they are the price of blood.'" How hypocritical, you know? Let's polish the gold cup, make it look nice, and there's trash inside. It was the price of blood because they paid it. So, they couldn't put it back in the temple. As they consulted together in verse 7, "and bought with them the potter's field to bury strangers in. Therefore, that field has been called the field of blood to this day, to the day of this writing." The potter's field was an area that when the potter made pottery, I guess, and there were faults found in it, cracks found in us. Did you hear that misspeak? Probably not really misspoken. We're all kind of cracked pots, aren't we? Cracked pot then, you couldn't do anything with. It would leak. It'd be cast aside, thrown in the field, and those shards would break up and fill an area, and it wasn't good for anything else. they would use it to bury strangers in. We're like that, short of the Lord. Cracked pots. Can't fill our own holes. We leak. We bleed. Useless without him. Verse 9, then it was fulfilled what was spoken by Jeremiah the prophet, saying, and they took the 30 pieces of silver, the value of him who was priced, whom they of the children of Israel priced, and gave them for the potter's field as the Lord directed me. I'll tell you, that section of scripture is problematic, just in case somebody brings that up and challenges you on this. Matthew tells us here that spoken by Jeremiah the prophet. If you actually look that up, it was spoken by Zechariah. So, explanation for that. Some say that Matthew made a mistake. Inspired by the Lord, he made a mistake. Some say that it was just copied wrong. I think a better explanation, back then, we didn't have the nice chapter and verse. Nelson and other publishers didn't break it down for us. And there were scrolls that the Word of God was passed on. Scroll of the law, scroll of the prophets. The scroll of the prophets, Jeremiah being the first, was entitled the scroll of Jeremiah. Zechariah was contained within that scroll. I believe that that's what that was, if you're challenged on that. Verse 11, we get back to Jesus in front of Pilate here. Now Jesus stood before the governor, and the governor asked him, saying, are you the king of the Jews? Jesus said to him, it is as you say. And while he was being accused by the chief priests and elders, he answered nothing. Then Pilate said to him, do you not hear how many things they testify against you? But he answered him not a word, so that the governor marveled greatly. He marveled greatly. He didn't defend himself. You guys ever notice that when you're faced with accusation and you begin defending yourself, it's hard to stop. One accusation leads to another. You get on this path where you're having to defend all your actions, to defend your motivations for things. Interesting what we see from the Lord here. The governor marveled. Why? Unusual. Certainly as the Jewish nation, the Jewish people were taken into custody before, I'm sure they defended themselves strongly. And now they've got their leader, one that claims to be the king of the Jews. And again, they didn't have a real charge against Jesus. They had religious charges where he claimed to be God, which they saw as blasphemous. So their charge before Pilate was that this is insurrection. He's claiming to be king, have authority over the Jews, which you have, Pilate. Again, they didn't love Pilate. They were using Pilate. This was the fulfillment of prophecy back in Isaiah chapter 53. Verse 7, it says, he was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. And he was led as a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before its shears is silent, so he opened not his mouth. And we'll talk about that a little bit later, why he didn't open his mouth. The scourging that would have taken place, the reason behind that. One other section I'd like to share on that is Psalm 18. Psalm 18 was an area I was in earlier this week, separate from this study, on my own, seeking the Lord on some things that were going on. That idea of having to defend yourself rather than do as Jesus did here. Let God do that. But as I read this, as I prepared for this, I thought it was also appropriate. It's funny how that works. Psalm 18, verse 2, actually back up to verse 1. I will love you, Lord. I will love you, O Lord, my strength. The Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer. My God, my strength in whom I will trust. my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold. Actually, verse 3, I will call upon the Lord, who is worthy to be praised. So shall I be saved from my enemies. Let the Lord do it, guys. It is as you say. And while he was being accused by the chief priests and elders, he answered nothing. Pilate said to him, do you not hear how many things they testify against you? But he answered him not one word, so that the governor marveled greatly. Jesus remained silent. Now we go on. Verse 15. Now at the feast, the governor was accustomed to releasing to the multitude one prisoner whom they wished. And at that time, they had a notorious prisoner called Barabbas. Now Barabbas means son of man. And some say that his name was actually Jesus Barabbas. So you have Jesus, son of God, and you have Jesus Barabbas, son of man. And we see that the people here end up having a choice. And at that time, they had a notorious prisoner called Barabbas. Verse 17, therefore, when they had gathered together, Pilate said to them, whom do you want me to release to you, Barabbas or Jesus, who is called Christ? For he knew that they had handed him over because of envy. He knew their motivation. There wasn't a real charge here. They were envious. Verse 19, while he was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent to him saying, have nothing to do with that just man, for I have suffered many things today in a dream because of him. But the chief priests and elders persuaded the multitudes that they should ask for Barabbas and destroy Jesus. The governor answered and said to them, which of the two do you want me to release to you? They said, Barabbas. Pilate said to them, what then shall I do with Jesus, who is called Christ? They all said to him, let him be crucified. Then the governor said, why, what evil has he done? But they cried out all the more, saying, let him be crucified. When Pilate saw that he could not prevail at all, but rather that a tumult was rising, he took water and washed his hands before the multitude, saying, I am innocent of the blood of this just person. You see to it. Verse 25, and all the people answered and said, his blood be on us and on our children. Then he released Barabbas to them, and when he had scourged Jesus, he delivered him to be crucified. Imagine this scene, guys. We know from the story, Pilate's view, saw Jesus as a just man, knew their motivation, that it was out of envy, not criminality, that he was brought. But he puts himself in a box again. Even his wife comes and says, I've suffered many things from a dream. Don't you wonder what that dream was? Did she see the crucifixion? Did she see a glimpse of the great white throne judgment? What did she see that she suffered, that she labeled as suffering in a dream? Have you ever thought about it from Barabbas' perspective? I mean, we know the story. We know what happens. We know Jesus is crucified for me and for you, died in our place. I don't believe for a minute that Pilate thought they would choose Barabbas. So I don't think he was out there on stage saying Jesus or Barabbas. He was probably in the hole somewhere or in quarters. So what does he hear from in there? A huge crowd of people shouting. Could he hear Pilate? Could he hear his voice? Or could he just hear the multitudes? Could he hear him shout, Barabbas? And then the single voice of Pilate goes out, and what shall I do with Jesus? And all he hears is, crucify him, crucify him. So is Barabbas expecting to die? Does he know what's going on outside? And then he comes out thinking he's going to be killed, and he's set free because Jesus dies in his place. I don't know. I don't know if when you guys read this, if you take in the whole picture and imagine all those things, but I can't wait to find out. I get so many questions when we get there. His wife says, have nothing to do with that just man in verse 19. For I've suffered many things today in a dream because of him. But the chief priests and elders persuaded the multitudes. As she's talking to him, as he's making this decision before the crowds, they're going through the crowd. Choose Barabbas. That they should ask for Barabbas and destroy Jesus. Verse 21, the governor answered and said to them, which of the two do you want me to release to you? They said, Barabbas. I think in verse 22, he's caught off guard. Pilate said to them, Barabbas. What then shall I do with Jesus who is called Christ? They all said to him, let him be crucified. Pilate has another chance to do the right thing. But again, he's led by the crowd around him, led by the desires of the world. Our story goes on as we lead to the crucifixion. And preparing for this, guys, I read about that. We've talked about the Passion of the Christ in that movie and the betrayal in there and how it doesn't really touch what Jesus did for us physically, much less spiritually. Nowhere in Hollywood has that been captured. About the closest thing that I found this week was an article from 1986 in the American Medical Association. A doctor wrote about the physical death of Jesus Christ. Talked about crucifixion and how each stage in that, what that would have done physiologically. And as I read that, my intent was to share it so you would know, so you could get a little peace. But as I reread this and prayed over this, it's not the focus that Matthew took. Matthew kind of spares us from those details. What Matthew does focus on is, what then shall I do with Jesus who was called Christ? And Pilate goes on, they tell him to crucify him, let him be crucified. 23, then the governor said, why? What evil has he done? But they cried out all the more, saying, let him be crucified. When Pilate saw that he could not prevail at all, but rather that a tumult was rising, he took water and washed his hands before the multitude, saying, I am innocent of the blood of this just person. Again, he says, this just person, you see to it. Pilate tries to wash his hands and proclaim his own innocence. But this is a question that we all have to answer.